Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Wednesday, January 11th, 2012. I am your host, Greg Luca, and today I'm joined by two writers who I'm hoping enjoyed their little Christmas break here. We've been gone for a while. We have John Booth.
Hi, it's good to be back.
And we have Matt Watts.
I'm sorry, Marshall Spivak. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I want to do is apologize. I wasn't aware at the end of our last show how quickly kind of the end of the semester was going to creep up on us, how quickly everybody was going to skip town, and how long we'd go between shows. But we'll try to get caught up here. We have a pretty broad basketball show today, as you can tell by the length of the file you just downloaded. We're going to rank all the starters. We're going to talk about the best win, the best loss, break down some of the problems Florida's had on the road, and just pretty much anything related to the basketball team. We touch on a lot of different topics there, so that's full and complete. If you're looking for your little Gator Bowl coverage, because I know everybody's dying for some more of that, we're going to come at you tomorrow with kind of a season recap. Maybe talk about some things heading into next year. We haven't totally decided.
Discuss this new Brent Peace hire as well.
Yeah. A lot of news off the field as well. So we got a lot of things to get to on that front, but we'll start with basketball today, and I guess we'll just get right into it. All right, so it's been a while since we last talked. The last thing was the Ohio State game, I think. I don't even think we have Syracuse on here. But rather than kind of go week by week and try to break everything down, I think where I want to start is I'll get you guys to weigh in on, based on what we know now, how deep do you think this team can go in the tournament and how dangerous are they come March? So we'll start with resident hoops expert Mr. Booth over here.
Yeah, when you look at it, I mean, the last two games losing to teams that are well out of Florida's caliber at the moment. I mean, Tennessee was 7-7 before they played them. And Rutgers had a similar record as well. They came into the game, no real quality wins. Of course, they've beaten number 8 UConn since, so that Rutgers loss looks a little bit better. But you got to think, you know, that's a team loaded with freshmen. Much like Tennessee, they seemed rattled coming into the game as far as the way their schedule had panned out. So both of those losses, you know, they're going to hurt Florida at the end of the year no matter what they do in SEC. That's going to be something that weighs them down. If you were talking about seeding right now, I couldn't imagine them being any higher than a 4 seed, and I think that might be a little high. I'd probably put them at a 5. So they're going to have to really do some things in SEC play, maybe upset Kentucky once, definitely take care of Mississippi State to get a good seed first before I'm going to say that they're going to make a really great run in the NCAA tournament right now. Because, you know, even though they just beat Georgia last night, it was a convincing, you know, defensive performance, extremely inspired with the way that they held UGA kind of in check. But, you know, this team, they're going to have to prove that they can actually beat a quality opponent on the road before I'm going to put them, you know, even though it would be a neutral environment in the NCAA tournament, but still a very pressure-filled situation.
Yeah, or beat any opponent on the road, like you said. We'll get into that a little bit later. But, and I agree with you that they're going to have a lot of chances to get quality wins because they're going to play. There's a lot of good teams in the SEC this year, or at least a few at the top, that if you beat them, especially on their home court, that'll count as resume wins. Matt, where are you?
Yeah, I mean, they've got plenty of opportunity to climb back up into that upper echelon, I think. But I'm not completely sold that they can. I mean, you saw against Tennessee, if they have a cold shooting night, they really don't have that inside presence that they need. I mean, Patrick Young, sure, he's good. But I haven't seen, you know, has he ever exploded for, you know, 25 points in a game and taken over and controlled? It seems like every time he kind of gets that feeling where he's going to, they kind of go away from him and start going back to shooting threes. I'm just not sold that they have a complete package offensively and that they buy in completely defensively to achieve a better run than they had last year. I'm just not sold on that yet.
Well, I mean, I guess the point I would make is the things you aren't sold on don't seem to be talent things. It seems like they could easily, in a month, you could look back and it could be a completely different team. Or do you think incapable of getting
problems? I'm not sure that Patrick Young has the talent against some of the bigger bodies inside. I mean, sure, he's a big physical presence, but you kind of saw it against Tennessee with Maimon. I didn't get to watch a lot of the game, but from what I saw, it seemed like he was getting pushed around kind of a lot, and he didn't make a big impact in that game. And Maimon's not, you know, Maimon's not Solinger. Maimon's not some of these top echelon guys that he's going to face in the tournament. So I'm just not sure that should that situation arise when they get there that they'll be prepared for it. I mean, like you said, we may be saying in a month that I was wrong, but right now I just don't see it.
Where do you think the seed would stand right now if they had to do it today?
Like, I agree with Booth. I think they'd probably be a 4. I think a 4 and maybe a 5. They dropped to, what, 19 in the polls?
Yeah.
They just haven't beaten anybody. Arizona, it's not that much of a quality win. Texas A&M isn't that much of a quality win. FSU's lost to two Ivy League teams.
Yeah, they're a 6-loss right. team.
Right. So who have they beaten?
Right, it's a good point. And I think 4 or 5 seems about right to me, too. And the thing is, when I look at it, I think there's enough good spurts that I see that they could, if they could more consistently play well, and every team shows flashes to the point where you think, wow, if you could somehow play like that for 40 minutes, it would be something impressive, but Florida's shown me enough good flashes that I think they could get to the point where they consistently play well and work their way up into the 2-3 range and still even have the kind of Final Four potential we talked about before the year.
And I don't think you can discount how they played against Ohio State and Syracuse earlier in the year as well. I think that might have had a little deflating effect going into the holiday break and all of that, because they played badly in both of those games, but they also played both of those teams tougher than I think anybody else has, except for, you know, Indiana beat Ohio State and whatnot. But before that, Florida played both of those teams close. It was, what, 4-point loss to Ohio State or to Syracuse, and like a 6-point loss to Ohio State.
7-point
loss. And they had more turnovers and assists in both of those games. So there's definitely the talent and the potential there. And I think, like a lot of people said, should they get a decent seed, work their way back up to a 2-3 seed, they're two good matchups away from being in the Final Four.
Right.
Because they have that power offensively if they're on.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think as we kind of talk about, there's some things they do well, some things they don't do well. I think something that would kind of help us narrow that down is I sent you guys out a little email to be fully disclosed, so you had time to think about this. But I want to talk about their best win and what went right, and then their worst win and their worst loss and what went wrong. So, I mean, Booth, you want to start us off there?
I think their best win so far has been FSU right before Christmas break, right before they kind of went on a hiatus and everybody got sick, everybody got injured, and then they've kind of hit that, you know, funk that we've seen the last couple games until they just broke out of it against Georgia. Watching that game, that was the most intensity I've seen from that team, you know, both halves, not really letting up against FSU. They didn't shoot amazing as a team in that game, but I think really the key was Brad Beal did. And I think if you can get a 50% shooting performance from three, from the guy who's on the court the most, I think that's going to set them up well in most games. Because, you know, despite I forget which game it is off the top of my head. It might have been UAB where Beal went 2 for 15, missing almost exclusively, like, layups. It was just a complete off performance. He was blowing, you know, drives down the lane left and right. But regardless of that performance, I think if he has his three-point shot going, he is going to hit his free throws, and he is going to hit those mid-range shots and those layups. And if you're getting 20 points from him with what he's able to do rebounding, I mean, that's, you know, that those are kind of like player of the year, you know, numbers if a guard would be able to keep that consistency, let alone a freshman. So.
Right. Before we kick it over to Watts, I'll add on to that because I picked FSU too, and I think you look at it, they held FSU to 40% shooting. FSU shoots 40% in practice, so that's not that impressive. But I think when you look at what they were able to do on offense in that game, had 15 assists and 11 turnovers, and when they've lost, ball movement's been a problem a lot of the time. So their ability to kind of select good shots, make the shots in that game, and then still win decisively, even with the free throw struggles they had in that game, I thought was impressive. Do you have that one too, or do you got something else?
No, for me, honestly, the best win was last night, was the Georgia win. I mean, for a couple of reasons, because it was coming off the worst performance of the year. I mean, obviously, I'm kind of breaking my, you know, mold here. I'm telling you what my worst game is before my best game. But coming off that game against Tennessee, to see the effort that they put out defensively last night was amazing to me. You know, especially for a guy like Pat Young. Because if he's not the focal point in offense, to see the way he played defensively even late into the second half last night, that's the type of effort that they're going to need going forward, especially when they're not hot shooting. If they don't play that way defensively against good teams, they don't have a chance. And Pat Young, everybody talked about the, you know, amazing SWAT. I mean, it was the lead of my story today. It was great. But for me, the better play was a couple minutes later when he closed out on a three and prevented a wide-open look from the wing when they were giving up a lot of wide-open looks in the end of that second half. I mean, they were great in that win for a lot of it until the game was out of hand. And I think that's what they were challenged to do in practice, and they responded. And also, something that Billy talked about after the game, you saw a lot of Cody Larson in the beginning of the game because Eric Murphy and Patrick Young were missing assignments. And Billy said that he was taking them out. He wasn't going to baby them anymore. And Pat Young responded, and he played well after that. He didn't, you know, pout and do some of the things that you would expect kind of out of younger players. They responded completely in that game. And if they can carry that momentum forward, I think it's only going
to
help them.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch that one as closely. I was in the office. But to hold a team to 48 points, and this isn't right. I mean, Trey Tompkins and Travis Leslie are in Lob City now, so that's totally different. It's not the same Georgia team, but still, 48 points is 48 points.
Yeah, I mean, they've still got guys that can create their own shot. I mean, they only averaged 62, but still, they were 11th in the SEC coming in scoring average, but they held them 14 points under that scoring average. So, yeah.
Booth, is there anything else you noticed at the game last night? Because, you know, 22-point win that stuck out to you is how they were able to be so dominant in that game?
Yeah. I mean, just kind of on a side note, when talking about Pat and his offensive game and what he can bring to the team, it seems like there is still some stress when it comes to the guards and trying to take care of Pat. Not that Pat's like a greedy player and is going to demand touches of the ball, but it seems like that it's growing into more of a burden on them to get him the X amount of touches. In the way Billy talks about it, he's got to be, number one, he's got to get a good seal, and they need to recognize it just like that. They need, and he needs to be, you know, deep enough in the post to where, you know, all he has to do is a quick move and then lay it up. But it can't be too deep, and he can't be double teamed because then he won't be able to kick it out. And, you know, really, when you look at this front line, they have two tremendous players. You know, you talk about the plays that Pat's made. It's like every game it's a SportsCenter top 10 play. And then you have Eric Murphy, who's a nightmare, you know, when he's healthy and when he's knocking down shots. But nobody can really play like a dominant big man offensively.
Right.
I mean, Pat cannot face the basket.
Right.
It would be ridiculous. I would be amazed to see him do it in a game. I've seen him do it once against Arizona, and he hit a baseline jumper, but that's the one time this season I've seen it.
He's getting better with his jump step a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that, and I think that that's something that he needs to develop more because that will give him an option when he can catch it further away from the basket. And he's so athletic as a big man that should be a strength of his game, is that jump step and driving into a defender and getting them off of him and being able to go for an easy score.
But the only reason, like, against the Syracuses and the Ohio States and anybody that they're going to see against Kentucky, you know, Anthony Davis and Mississippi State and stuff, he's not going to be able to bully these guys around and get those great seals down low. And, you know, it was just like, you know, Kenny Hall and Maimon, you know,
right,
pushed him around. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to get that either. Now, against Ohio State, he did have a pretty good game in the first half of that. I think he scored 10 points in the first half against Ohio State or something like that. So it was, you know, he had a good start in that game. But I don't see the progression as much. I mean, he's beating up on the Yales and, you know, teams like that where he's able to get these seals. But, you know, it's I don't think it's going to come later on in the season.
So as it pertains to the differences between the games they win and the games they lose, are you saying there's kind of more of an emphasis on him when they're doing well, or that is it just an overall thing you're kind of talking about?
Yeah, it's just kind of overall, but in these games that they've been losing lately, and Rutgers was kind of a weird game in that regard, and then it's a bunch of freshman guards, you know, who they're throwing at him, and he still can't dominate offensively. Like there's a flaw there where it's, you know, it's not clicking, the connection between the guards, between Irving, Kenny, and Beal, and recognizing Pat right now.
Yeah.
You know, and you talk about the chemistry stuff, and, you know, he should go off against a team like Rutgers.
Right.
You know, and especially when they weren't particularly shooting well.
Right. You mentioned the Rutgers game. That'll certainly be in the running when we talk about the worst loss. Is that the one that you thought was the biggest or what you saw there? Or you
No, it might be because, you know, of my drive up to Tennessee and then having to watch the game at 11 a.m. and listening to Rocky Top and fireworks in the arena before the game starts.
Fireworks?
Seriously? Yeah, fireworks. Yeah,
it's 11 a.m.
Fireworks, 11 a.m.
They don't hold anything back in Tennessee.
No, so yeah, I definitely thought that was their worst performance. And, you know, I think you look at a team and you see that they're, you know, that guys are breaking a sweat. They are hustling and stuff like that. Like, you can never – I don't think I've seen a game this season where I'm like, oh, you know, not everybody's, you know, hustling and stuff like that. They're not trying hard because that's what they are. They are trying hard. They're just not – thinking whatsoever. Anybody can go outside in the Florida heat and you know, and work hard and break a sweat, but it takes somebody with a little bit of focus, you know, to actually work well and accomplish things efficiently. And that's not what I saw in Tennessee, and that was really kind of disturbing to see them completely, you know, out of focus and out of their game.
Yeah, once again, I'm with you on this one. I think that was definitely their worst loss. And there's a lot of things you could talk about what went wrong. They only had, it was the opposite of Florida State. They had 10 assists and 15 turnovers against Tennessee, and that's Tennessee's another team that is not as great as they've been, not even as average as they were last year.
No.
And it's surprising to see them struggle like that. And it just seems like Florida's offense, whenever they have to go on the road, hasn't been as crisp and they haven't been as decisive. And then, especially against Tennessee, I saw the defense kind of just fell apart too. What did you see? You agree with that assessment?
Yeah. It was, and you don't want to throw it on one player, but just from what I saw sitting on the baseline, especially in the first half, it was absolutely horrific. You know, closeouts by Eric Murphy and Pat. Like, any time that, you know, anybody got any sort of separation on the wing and they had a responsibility to shift over or help or provide a hand in the face of somebody, blew right by them. Just, it was like their feet were like loaded with concrete. It looked like, you know, again, you don't want to say that there was no effort there because that might be a little harsh, but it just wasn't thinking. How can you not help or hedge on a guy who's driving straight to the basket? And they just had so many easy shots. Anybody who watched that game were like, there's nobody contesting that follow. There's nobody contesting that layup. And it's amazing to say that, again, of a guy like Pat Young or Eric Murphy. Eric Murphy had 4 blocks that game. It was a career high. And yet it still felt like he wasn't all there. And the only reason it was because Tennessee was getting such great penetration around the basket and getting offensive rebound after offensive rebounds that, yeah, he had a chance to make those blocks.
Yeah, I'm on board with you guys for sure. Tennessee has got to be the game. And for me, I think all of these problems stem from a problem with maturity. I mean, you've got 3 to 4 guys playing large roles in this team that haven't played that much of a role and on this level and in that type of atmosphere yet. And I think that's the kind of impetus for what Billy talked about last night and saying that he's not babying these guys anymore, and that's why he started to do those things. It's because they've got to learn, and he's not going to let them just make mistakes anymore. If you make a mistake, he's pulling you out, and you're going to know about it. And I don't think you're going to see the type of effort that you saw against Tennessee. I don't think you'll see it again. I just don't.
I'm sorry. It's just like in college basketball, like I know Billy's talking about it every single press conference now, but almost every good team in America is going through youth stuff. Ohio State is. These guys, all the good teams are young because they bring good players in and they leave.
Right.
You know, they lost to Rutgers, who's filled with freshmen. You know,
right. Tennessee's, I don't think it's not necessarily young. Age. I think it's
the person.
Right. It's the actual person, because I mean, everybody's matures at a different age at a different rate. You know what I mean? I think that maybe it's something to do with the road, like what their scheduling is. Like if they're not, you know, if they're not on a structure where they have to keep like a business mentality when they go on the road, or I don't know what it is, but they just don't feel comfortable. It's just, there has to be a correlation there between playing bad on the road and playing bad in the losses and being young and not retaining that focus.
Right. I mean, when I look at the road games, and to clarify, they're 0-4 in true road games. They've won in, like, Jacksonville and neutral site games and stuff like that. But when they've actually had to go to the other team's home court, they're 0-4, and that's losses to Syracuse and Ohio State, which are excusable in a lot of ways.
But then
Rutgers and Tennessee, too. And when I watch the games, everybody has their own kind of theory. Some people say, like, the movement without the ball is not as good. And I'm not sure I've even seen that, because it seems like they're trying to call and run the same plays, and at times it gets bogged down. And there's other people who are saying that, like, they just aren't passing it as well. But even in those games, you see flashes of the same kind of passing you see at home. So, I mean, do you have an answer? Like, what are you seeing in terms of when they go on the road, why is it different? And what is different, even?
I mean, certainly they're not the aggressor. They're waiting to see what Rutgers throw at them. They're waiting. You know, they jump out on Rutgers in that game. You know, they start decently against Tennessee. It falls apart really quickly, but right off the bat, you're not like, oh, they're in for a long night. You know, I'm thinking, okay, they've got a, you know, 4-6 point lead. They'll open it up over the next 5 minutes, but it stayed close. And, you know, Tennessee, of course, opens up a 10-point lead in the second half. But it's, you know, you're looking at them, and whether it's not, you know, pressing, not being able to really make other teams uncomfortable on the road because Billy really wants to keep Pat and Murphy in there early or not. But, you know, whatever it is, they're waiting for another team to make a run on them, it feels like. They're waiting to react to everything that somebody else is doing and not wanting to take that risk and be overly aggressive on the road.
I love that you, like, to say that they're not as aggressive. That's kind of exactly, I hadn't thought of that phrasing, but I think that's exactly it. Because it's like, you see that when they're, like, on offense, they have the same kind of openings and the same shot selection, you know, concerns. And it seems like they have, like, open looks or they have a lane they can get a pass through, and the decision is just, like, a second slower, and they're kind of, like, just trying to wait and see what happens, and it's not the same kind of thing you see at home where it's extra crisp and decisive.
I think it's a level of tentativeness because, like I said before, you've got, you know, these guys that haven't been in those atmospheres in those roles yet. They're still going through it. They're still learning. The Will You Get, the Eric Murphy, the Brad Beal, the Pat Young. Like, these guys were all in complementary roles or not in a role like this last season.
Right, and I guess to some extent I could have seen this coming, but, like, the way I looked at it was the two guys who were supposed to be the leaders of this team and who are going to dominate the ball the most in Kenny Boynton and Irvin Walker last year went through the same thing, where the talk from about the same point until up to where we are now and going through even into March was about, you know, the chemistry isn't where it needs to be, and then Boynton tossed around the words like selfish and whatnot, and
the vocabulary escalated in the last couple weeks.
It's
disturbing, kind of like flash words that you think, oh, there's true problems with this team, almost. You know, when you hear that they're having problems with, you know, unselfishness and chemistry and stuff.
And I guess my point is that I thought after they went through it last year that they wouldn't have to deal with it again, but it's like we're right back where we were a season ago.
When you get a guy, I mean, four guys on a team that their whole entire life they've done nothing but put the ball in the basket and be the focal point. As much as they say all we want to do is win and play the right way, they care, you know, inside, whether they, you know, show it or not, they care about how they do individually, you know, and that has a factor in it.
I mean, it just seems like maybe they care about how they do, but I haven't seen a guy who I thought he was trying to force his own shot.
I don't think so either. I mean, I think they play within the structure to a degree, but they may not be content with playing in that structure, you know?
I mean, I even felt like there were times where they were too unselfish. Like, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's times where they pass up open looks and they don't get a better one later.
Billy was saying Brad had a problem with that.
Yeah, especially Brad. Brad has passed up a lot of open threes, and it's like transition stuff. He'll be, you know, and I know, you know, Billy got mad at Rosario the other day, or last night, I should say, for shooting a couple quick threes in transition and stuff. But I think Brad Beal would have the green light with all he does for the team, that if you get an open three like that, take it. Don't wait for something inside when you're wide open and, you know, you're Brad Beal and you have that tremendous three-point stroke. You just take the shot. but he's been deferring. You know, he's been kicking that ball out as soon as he gets it. You know, it's he doesn't have that you know, you don't want to call it like killer instinct, because he's a tremendous scorer when he's, you know, when he's hitting his shots just like he was last night. But he's definitely not, he definitely doesn't look like he's playing full speed.
I think
every trip down the court.
I think that comes with a level of comfort that's still being developed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, to kind of move along a little bit, I thought something that would be fun to do and would allow us to kind of touch on everything would be to rank the starters from the best to the worst. And I think the thing I assume we can agree that Kenny Boynton is the number one guy, right?
Yeah.
So let's just talk a little bit about what he's done. The way he's shot the ball this season is, I mean, it's something that I'm extremely surprised by, because there's no change in the motion, but he's still been able to shoot. I'll pull up the numbers. It's an absurd percentage, and it's something that, you know, throughout his career he struggled to hit the three, and it's because he's got that funky motion. But if there's one thing that's changed, it seems like he's at least releasing the ball at the highest point on his crazy shot.
That's exactly what I've noticed, like, throughout the season. Sorry to interrupt.
He's 60 for 131 on threes this year, which is like 46%. So
he leads the nation right now in made three-pointers.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So, what have you seen from him? Are you surprised by this development as much as we are?
Yeah, definitely the three-point shooting. I heard a lot of good things coming into the year about how he, you know, without his three-point shots actually falling down last year, that he, you know, started picking up a pretty good ground game heading towards the basket. And certainly you've seen that. I think he's leading at least among the guards in three-point plays, which have been, you know, some of them have been extremely acrobatic and really strong moves to the basket. But, yeah, with his three-point shot, we all talked, I think, in our first podcast that there's no way he sustains this. You know, there's no way he keeps this up. And, yeah, he has taken a tremendous amount of three-pointers, but he's hitting about 45%. I mean, you have to be happy with that at this point. He could fall off for the rest of the season. And you could say he had an amazing year shooting the ball.
And he's the second leading scorer in the SEC, right?
Yeah. So
I mean, yeah, for me, like Greg said, the three-point shooting and releasing at the top of his jump has been absolutely just miles better than it has ever been in his Florida career this year. To think that, you know, two off seasons ago he was going to go work with a coach on his shot, and, you know, it was such a big concern, Kenny Boynton's, you know, awkward shot, is he ever going to be able to be the prolific scorer everybody thought he was going to be? Yeah, he is. Yeah. And that, and like you said, his propensity to drive the lane has increased this year, and I think that's only benefited his scoring and only benefited, you know, his ability to dish as well, and helped the team on offense in so many ways.
Right. If there's anything, I'd like to see that go up even more,
because
I think he can be really effective when he does that. But, I mean, another thing about him, he's second on the team with three assists a game, and he never turns the ball over.
No, like,
his turnover total is going to be, you know, among the best on the team, among the most on the team, because he has the ball so much. But when you think about how often he's handling it and how many shots he's taking, his turnover rate is extremely good, and it's just another good thing about him. And then on top of that, he's still considered one of the team's best defenders, right, Booth? Would you say that?
Yeah. I think maybe, especially the way Billy talks, I think Brad has kind of taken on that mantle with how many minutes that he's doing right now, and how important he is in defensive rebounding, kind of the weird matchups that he has to deal with. But, you know, if I was going to pick one guy to both score my points and to shut down somebody else on defense, it would probably be Kenny. But I think by right now, he's right there with Kenny as best defender.
Yeah, that kind of segues in, I think, to going to number two. For me, the second is definitely Mr. Beal, for a lot of reasons. And to touch on what you just said, Kenny said earlier in the year that Beal can do everything that he can do from a quickness standpoint, but he's also several inches taller and quite a few pounds heavier. So he presents a matchup problem for whoever he's guarding, and he can guard, you know, the one, the two, the three. He can guard pretty much anybody from my perspective. And for me, why he's number two, I mean, obviously leads the team in minutes. He's the leading rebounder and the team's second leading scorer. And he's a freshman. Who could you put at two other than Brad Beal, in my opinion?
Well, I mean, just to clarify real quick, he's second on the team in rebounding. Patrick Ewing,
he passed him last night.
Six, but I mean, when I look at Brad Beal, shooting 31% is bad.
Yeah.
Like, I can't, from three, I don't know if I like that as much. And what he does as a rebounder is great, especially because of how desperately they need another rebounder. Right. But when you look at that, and then you look at the turnovers that he's dealt with, I mean, that's something that I
think his turnover number is high because he's either great or bad. And that's, you know, it's kind of hard to be in between for him right now. And, you know, he's had a couple games with 5 and 6 turnovers. But when he's not turning the ball over, I think he might be their best player on the court outside of Kenny.
Mm. Yeah, I think the one thing that kind of...
You look at me skeptical.
What I was going to say is, and it seems weird to say this, and you guys are definitely going to disagree, but you could almost, for me, you could put the next 4 in any order, and I would be like, whatever. Like, I think they all have serious faults, and I think we'll get into it as we go on. But, like, when you look at... Sure, he grabs a lot of rebounds, but when you talk about he is the leader in minutes, the rate is not as great as it could be, and he has been good, and it's important, but he's not, like, an all-star rebounder. And, again, the turnovers are something I can't look past. The overall decision-making, we talk about when he passes up on shots, and a lot of people are going to give him a pass because he's a freshman, but when you see what one-and-dones have done in college basketball, the way they've been able to come in and dominate, I kind of don't factor that in at all. So just for me, it could go either way. But when I did my rankings, I also had him second, but I think it was real close. And you kind of said, like, for sure second. So
yeah, you talk about the turnover numbers, and, you know, that's one thing. I would expect, for as much talk as we hear about him deferring to his teammates, which he does, and really taking a back seat at times and really facilitating stuff, his assist numbers aren't that impressive. You know, it's one thing for him to turn it. He has a lot of one-assist games. But, you know, then again, it's really tough to talk about because it's like he's the only player where we look at every single facet along the stat sheet and say Brad Beal has to shoot well from the field. He has to shoot well from three. He has to rebound decently. He has to have a positive assist-turnover ratio. And then he also has to play a ton of minutes.
Right.
Like, I feel like if we could, like, hone in and just be like, you know, have a little bit smaller expectation of him. Okay, Brad, just rebound and shoot the ball well from the field. Or Brad, you know, just shoot the ball well from three and have a positive assist-turnover ratio, I think we would have a better opinion of his play so far this season. But you talk about, like, guys like that who have really torn it up lately in college basketball. Guys like, you know, the John Walls, you know, a lot of point guard-type, you know, esque players. And, yes, they are scoring a lot of points and they defend fairly well, but they're not... I still don't feel like they're having to fill as much of a burden as Brad Beal is right now.
Right, and for I agree with that completely. And for me to put him as my clear number two is because if everybody else around him plays well, and this goes for anybody on the team, if everybody else around you plays well and you have a great night, I feel like Brad Beal, outside of Kenny Boynton, is the one that can positively affect the game the most.
Right. I mean, when he's at his best, I think he's...
That's what I'm saying.
Right. But, I mean, just to kind of elaborate something Booth talked about, his assist rate is lower than everybody except, I think it was only Larson, and his turnover rate is higher than everybody except for Larson and Prather. So you kind of look at what he's done on a per-minute basis.
But those are
outstanding.
Fundamental and coaching things that he can improve upon, in my opinion. The other guys don't have the physical tools that he has to, you know, completely change a game.
Right. We've been on him for a while. Kind of moving on to number three. I mean, I had Patrick Young. Like I said, I think it's close. Do you guys agree with that?
I think Patrick Young. It's close for me with Murphy just because of the matchup problems that Murphy possesses, the matchup problems that he poses when he's on. But, yeah, I think it's got to be Pat at three.
So far this year, Patrick Young is averaging 11.8 points, a team-leading 7 rebounds. I mean, has he made the jump that you expected when you think about what you saw last year and now where we are halfway through this season?
Defensively, and yes, I'd have to say. I mean, he's made some tremendous plays, and on the whole, you know, he hasn't been truly dominated, I don't think, by another center. I mean, Maimon is close, what Tennessee's forward did the other day. But, you know, as far as some of the other matchups that he's had against... You know, Fab Mello and Jared Sullinger, you know, and I know Rakeem Christmas really didn't play too much for Syracuse. But still, in those matchups, I feel like he came away with, you know, probably probably feeling pretty good about the way he played defensively. I think he held both of those players below their averages in those games. So I would say defensively, it's, you know, he's maybe improved a little bit. I don't think it's been a huge jump per se. It's certainly the whole foul thing that we, you know, heard about so much in the preseason, that hasn't panned out. He's
right.
Extremely smart, it feels like, with his fouls. He's, you know, keeping his hands up. He blocks when he can. But like we talked earlier, his offensive game is,
right.
You know, that's keeping him out of contention to be in the top two.
Well, before we go over to offense, we can talk about the defense a little more. When we talk about the foul thing, throughout his career here I always go to the per minute stuff, he's never been anywhere close to a number that would be considered troubling or among the nation's best. He was like 4 fouls in 40 minutes last year, and he's at 3.7 so far this season. And I think a part of that, though, is a problem because he almost tries too hard not to foul, I feel like. When he gets matched up on somebody
hands.
In the post,
yeah.
He just does this, like, tree thing that you talk about with the little kids, and it's just like he just stands there with his arms straight up. And then either the guy goes around him, or he doesn't even try to get the rebound because he's still standing there with his arms over his head trying not to foul the guy and trying not to, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't think, and then you see all the highlight plays, but that's always coming off the ball, coming from help side, that he's getting these huge rejections, I think. So, I don't know, maybe he's a little overrated as a defender, but, I mean, Watts, we heard Booth's take. Where do you stand?
I agree with both of your takes here. I mean, for years, I mean, not years, but since the middle of last year, and throughout the offseason, the talk was, if Pat Young goes pro, he'll be a lottery pick, and he'll, you know...
That's probably still true, because he's an athlete. They don't care about how
right,
he
but
basketball.
He's not there yet, you
right.
know? He's not there yet. He's just not.
I mean, yeah, I agree completely. I don't think... And then when you talk about not being there, a lot of that comes back to the offensive game, which Booth touched on briefly. And I think we've seen him play well in games offensively, but those are games usually where he has great matchups. Like, you talk about Arizona, where they kind of let him have his way down there, and it was one-on-one and with a much smaller player, and he could do whatever he wanted. And that's why Billy said in that game, if they gave him more shots, he could have easily scored 40 and maybe should have done more than even what he did. And just watching him play offense, I know his shooting percentage is going to be great because he gets a lot of dunks and stuff like that, but in terms of his actual ability to make post moves, it's not even as close to refined, and I think
it's better touch this year. He has better touch on his shots.
Better, sure, but it's not where it needs to be, I don't think. Like, what I was trying to drive at is when you talk about the people he's played against, like a guy like Sullinger, is a good defender, but when you face a lanky guy, and I think Anthony Davis is going to be a great example of this, I don't know if at 6'9 center Patrick Young not having perfect form on his hook shots is going to be able to do anything against the lanky defenders he's going to see. Like a guy like, or not as lanky as Azealia's, not necessarily a lanky guy, but a longer player. I think those guys are going to give Patrick Young a lot of trouble.
Especially because he can't go over both shoulders, really.
Right.
He can only go over his left shoulder now with his right hand. He tries with the left, but it's nowhere near as accurate as it should or needs to be. And like I said, the jump step isn't there yet. He really doesn't have that many moves, like you said.
Right, and I think in terms of his rebounding rate, it's kind of average, and I think that's why we were talking about this a little bit yesterday, and it got a little heated. I think Patrick Young is a disappointment in terms of what he was expected to be coming in, where last year people thought he had a shot to be freshman of the year in a league with Terrence Jones and Brandon Knight and some other players who had great seasons.
I'm not sure that that's his fault or the fault of all of the, you know, 24/7 news cycle placing expectations on all these kids coming out of high school when they're not necessarily playing the level of competition that they're going to play at the next level. Like, Patrick Young played basketball in Jacksonville. I mean, I'm from Jacksonville. I love Jacksonville a little bit, but can you name any other prospects that have come out of Jacksonville?
Right. It's not exactly
it. It's not a hotbed, right. It's not a hotbed for basketball talent. There's not much competition there. So, sure, he looked great dunking on 6-foot white kids in Jacksonville.
Right. And, I mean, Booth, where do you stand on how kind of Patrick Young versus expectations? Do you think, was it just too much expected of him coming in, or?
Yeah, I remember reading a couple of years ago, right when it the Patrick Young kind of mania took off. And really in his recruitment, it really took a while for him to gain some momentum. He wasn't as highly thought of as a Sullinger for a long time, and that was a guy who, you know, his AAU team was kind of on par with Sullinger's Team Ohio, you know, at the same time when they were growing up. But, you know, it was that one summer right before he started at Florida where he played with the U.S., you know, U19 or U18 team. And like you said a couple times, people looked at this huge human being who looks, you know, 4 years, you know, physically more developed than everybody else, looked like he's been, you know, hitting the weight room all of his life, and they see all of this potential, but, and they just gloss by, well, it's not there yet. He's, you know, beating up on a bunch of French and Ukrainian kids, and they're not really seeing him against, you know, true, you know, Division One talent.
Right. I think that the physique bias that existed and still exists with Patrick Young is, like, unprecedented in terms of... if he looked exactly like Eric Murphy and did everything the same way he did it, people would think he was, like, terrible.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just, you look at the guy and he's got the huge arms and the Dwight Howard shoulders and he's jumping out of the gym and it just hasn't matched the production that we see on the court. But anyway, moving off Patrick Young, I guess number four, you guys would... Oh, actually, I was going to say you guys would probably go with Walker, but is that true? Or are we too concerned with some of his shortcomings, or where do you guys stand on who's number four?
I'm not putting Walker four. I mean, obviously, you guys are kind of familiar with my Walker bias, but yeah, I just, for me, he doesn't bring much to the table for this team. They've got scorers. They've got better defenders. They've got, honestly, he's second or third in the SEC in assists, but I think they've got better distributors of the ball too. I don't know. I just don't think that Irving Walker puts fear in any coach when they're scouting Florida. Like, I don't think they ever have to say, oh, well, we've got to make sure that we shut down Irving Walker.
Right. I think last year that was the case, but this year not even nearly as much.
Right. I think Eric Murphy presents a lot more problems to opponents than Irving Walker does, and that's why I would put him at four.
Right. Before we take, I mean, do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just quickly, I think the only, besides the Arizona game where I was, you know, I was rolling my eyes at Kenny Boynton, he took way too many three-pointers that game. The only guy every single game that I'm like, you know, why? And then you look at, you know, Bilya, and yeah, maybe this might be a bad perception. You know, I'm not in their locker room. Billy loves Irving, clearly, but it's still, it's the, you know, it's the 25-foot, you know, three-pointers.
With
right?
24 seconds on and the shot clock.
Yeah, you're not that guy anymore, and it's clear at this point you don't have to do that anymore. You could get away with it a couple years ago when you really needed that, maybe when you needed a boost, if you felt like you could hit that shot. It's the driving way too far in the lane. Everybody else...
Without any intent.
Yeah, everybody else in this team right now is trying to, I feel like, rein in their, you know, their abilities to you know, try to focus them a little bit more and to not overextend themselves. And some people do. I mean, Rosario did it last night. He shot a couple shots that, you know, I wrote about it today that he shouldn't have, but he still added a little bit to the team. But, you know... It's those kind of plays that it's just all it is stubbornness, in my opinion.
Right.
With Walker, it's holding on to something that's dead. You don't have to play like that anymore. If you want your team to do well, you need to facilitate everybody because you have the ability. You've learned and sat behind some pretty good point guards at UF and you know and been in some high pressure situations. I mean, he could be a great point, and he's gotten a great assist to turnover ratio since he started had a little problems in the first five games. He's really turned around. And he's in the top three in the conference.
Like you said, though, but he's been here for so long, he should know and be able to facilitate even better than he is. Like he should know this offense and know the plays and know where he should be and who should be open and where to get the ball to the nth degree. He should be better than he is.
Right.
He should be better.
He shouldn't have any moments where he takes a shot or, you know, tries to push something a little bit too much and he's having to look over his shoulder at Billy to see if he's, you know, if he's got a scowl on his face or sending in Scotty.
Right.
And I've seen that way too often recently where that's had to happen and, And when that does, you know, Irv knows, you know, as soon as Scotty's coming in, he's heading straight to the bench. And, you know, there's no congratulating anybody. It's
And there hasn't been the redeeming, you know, big shot Irv quality this year either, to where you forget about some of the bad things that we're talking about because he comes up with those clutch shots and the clutch moments.
Right. I mean, to come to Irv's defense, as I've done many times over the last couple of years, the assist rate is very good. He's near the top 100 nationally in terms of, like, the percentage of assists he gets when he's out there. And I think that he's shooting 40% from three, which is good. And to some extent, he has toned down the shots a little bit because you still see it a lot. And it sticks out the most because it's sometimes a real bad selection and it's sometimes at a very inopportune moment. And it's always at the end of the game when, and in this case, this season, that has not worked out as well as it usually does. But overall, he has not shot as bad as a lot of people are kind of making it out to be. And when I look at the stats, he's third on the team in shots, where the last couple of years, it was a lock he was going to be one or two.
Right.
So he hasn't deferred as much as he needs to be doing, but it could be worse.
Yeah. It could be worse, but it should be better.
For sure.
It could be worse, but Scotty Wolvegan would be playing a lot more, I think.
Right. Right. Right.
So, anyway, to move on to Murphy a little bit, and I said this before that I could put the next four guys in any order. Eric Murphy's really impressed me this year. And I think in terms of how well he's shot the three, that was something that I kind of imagined coming in, because last year in limited attempts, he was very good at that as well. But you see what he's done in terms of defensively. I think he's not a terrible on-ball defender. He's gotten a lot of blocks this season, leads the team in blocks this season. And then you look at, he's actually got a few post moves too. He's done a couple things that have looked not terrible, and
he can put the ball on the floor.
Yeah, he's done a little bit of that. I mean, I've just been impressed with his overall game and how far he's come and how well he's kind of adapted to taking more minutes and how he's kind of fit into his role as a guy who's out there more often, but still is not the focal point, but still manages to get his. Like,
yeah.
I think he's slid into that role and fit in very well. And the rebounding needs to be better, but yeah. So, I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at on Eric Murphy. I don't know. Are you guys also impressed?
No,
you seem to slide him into five pretty easily, but
I don't think that I had him at four. You know, I think he could have easily been three ahead of Pat just because of the different things that he can do, and like I said before, the matchup problems that he poses.
He fulfills his expectations.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
right. Anyway, okay, so we've talked about all the starters. Do you guys have a pick for most valuable reserve?
I think it's got to be Will You Get.
That's who I went with, Booth.
Yeah, for his time, for filling in for Eric Murphy, I believe he had one double-double, had a couple double-digit games in there. When Murphy was out with what was originally thought to be a torn meniscus, but turned out to be an old injury and just a bone bruise. But yeah, he's done a tremendous job. And his rebounding is, you know, otherworldly with how he can, you know, go up seemingly against any team. And, you know, even though he's only 6'7" and hauling, you know, 7-8 rebounds every night.
Yeah, I think he's the best rebounder on the team. And, I mean, when you say, we talk about Patrick Young, we talk about Eric Murphy, who's not as good, but talk about Brad Beal. But when he's out there, and maybe it's because he has to play less minutes and he can bring more energy and be that spark, but what he does in terms of the rates of rebounding is by far and away the best on the team, especially on the offensive glass. I don't know how he does it, but it's like he kind of just like sucks it in from wherever he is. He's really good at rebounding outside of his area, I feel like, which is something that's a valuable skill, especially for a bench guy who needs to provide that energy and be that spark.
To me, it's comparable to like slot third receiver having the want to block downfield in the run game.
Yeah.
Like, rebounding is all about want to me. And I don't think that Pat Young and Eric Murphy pride themselves on their rebounding. I think Brad Beal prides himself on the ability that he has to contribute in that area. And I think Will You Get, when he comes off the bench, has that passion, has that want to go up and get the ball. And another thing that I've seen from him that I've been impressed with is the chemistry he's been able to develop with the front court in limited minutes. It's not great, but you've seen some great distribution in the paint from him that it's been kind of unexpected, and some great passes in there that have set up some easy buckets for the other guys.
Right, and then, I mean, along those same lines, his biggest problem last year was the turnovers, and that has not been an issue at all with him this year. And I haven't had a chance to ask him about this. I keep forgetting, and I don't know if either you talked to him and heard anything, but I have a feeling when he played with the French national team, He was the leading scorer and the leading rebounder. I have a feeling that they needed to put the ball in his hands a lot and that he learned a lot from that experience. I haven't been able to, you know, confirm that, but it's a theory. It's a theory that I have as to how he's managed to develop so far in that area. And the other thing I'll say is when Billy talked about him before the season, he said that Willie Aguette was a guy who could guard four positions, and you hear that a lot, and it's like, okay, yeah, no, he can't.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he can. Like, he's been really good, and he forces a ton of steals.
I mean, I think he could guard four positions against most teams, but some of the, against the more prolific ones and twos, I think he might have a little bit of a trouble.
Well, I mean, he can't guard any positions against Kentucky. But yeah. Like, it's not fair to talk about that way. All right. Well, then, I guess, if we had done this before the year, I think the most important reserve role would have been Mike Rosario's to lose. And he has not lived up to expectations, at least from my view of it. Booth, what have you seen from him? What's wrong with Mike Rosario at this point?
Yeah, I mean, certainly at first look, you'd say, okay, he's been really hampered by a lot of injuries. I mean, that's pretty bad luck to have his reoccurring back injury flare up, I believe, on the 17th or 18th that started. And then about a week later, he injures his ankle. He's missed time in four out of their last six games where he hasn't really been able to hit double-digit minutes, and a lot of those he's just flat sat out. So lately, with the exception of last night, I think that's his problem, you know, just not being able to practice and getting in the flow of things. But even before that, we kind of saw, you know, his hot start. I think he had like a 19-point game to start the season or something like that. And after that, we've really seen it kind of depreciate defensively, depreciate his shot selection, and also his turnovers in some situations and decision making. And, you know, if there's one guy who's been on, you know, Billy Donovan's, you know, I hate to call it like a dog list or anything like that for you know, somebody who he's really pointing out at, you know, every point that he needs to get better, it's been him though. And it's kind of disappointing when you think he had a year to sit and watch and reflect and practice to kind of figure out how to be a player in Billy Donovan's system.
Yeah, for me, I feel like, I mean, I didn't get to watch him a lot at Rutgers, but I feel like it's another one of those expectation things. He comes in as a two-time 1,000-point scorer, and everybody has these, you know, grandiose expectations that he's just going to be able to put the ball in the basket from anywhere on the floor, create his own shot, do whatever, and be prolific and dynamic. I'm not sure that he scored 1,000 points at Rutgers because he was that player or because he was the focal point of their offense.
Yeah, he took all the shots.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So here he's had to learn how to play defense. Billy's talked about being scared to death with him on defense. He takes absolutely ill-advised shots. He scored 7 points last night, 7 straight points, and they were all on shots that Billy Donovan was probably, if they didn't go in, going to be yelling at him about. And
yeah, that's,
you know,
what I wrote about
tonight.
Yeah. That first right. air ball where he's like, geez, okay, you're wide open.
Right, and Billy said that. Yeah, Billy in the post game says that Rosario came up to him and said, he said that he was wide open and that it was a fine shot. And Billy tried to tell him it was a bad shot. He said, well, if you were wide open and you didn't tell me that if it fell off your hand or you slipped or something, then you're just a bad shooter.
You're just
a really, really bad shooter.
And it's funny to me because you see, like, we sometimes, maybe not that game is a good example, but he'll come in and he'll hit a three, and then he'll drive to the lane, he'll hit a little floater, and then he'll hit another three, and it's like, okay, well, this is a good offensive player. He can be a spark plug. He can get some things going, and he can put the ball in the basket. And then that same game, like 5 possessions later, he'll throw up an air ball and he'll turn it over. And it's like most people from game to game might have consistency issues. He's got from possession to possession, he's not the same player.
I think it's mental, honestly. I think it's all mental with him. He obviously has the ability, but I'm not sure that he buys in completely to what is being asked of him. And I'm not sure that he wants to. I don't know. I just don't know what it is, you know? Like,
yeah, and you know, and Billy talks about how they don't really need bench scoring. I don't buy into that one bit. I think that's one thing that's hurt them over the last 5 games is they haven't been able to get double-digit, you know, scoring from their bench at all. It's just not happening. Even though Scotty Wobegon's made, I believe, a three-pointer. I'm counting last night when he got fouled and made three straight. That's a three-pointer. That's huge when Scotty Wobegon can put any points on the board for them. But as far as Rosario, if you can play him for 12 minutes and he has a hand in 12 points, I'll take that air ball. You know, I'll take that one defensive lapse if you only have to play him for that little, you know, that little spurt. He did the same thing against Arizona at the end of half in that game that kept Florida in it. Arizona started playing very well at the end of that first half, and Billy put in Rosario, and he scored 7 points in 6 minutes.
And you can't discredit what it does to the opposing team's defense as well. It kind of gets them out of their groove. It kind of adds a different little wrinkle. And you were right, he did have two great assists last night in that run as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's going to be that guy, and it looks like, to his credit, he did put more effort in on the other end of the floor last night also.
Yeah, two steals.
Yeah. So if he's going to be that guy, then yeah, he can, you know, improve and be probably their most valuable bench guy. But he, like you said, he's not lived up to what I think everybody expected from him. And having the year off and having the year to learn, I think everybody expected a more complete player than what he has shown so far.
All right, my last little cheesy idea before we wrap up the basketball segment was to do kind of a New Year's resolution thing. I know we're a little bit late, but something you want to see from either the team or any of the players that they need to do to kind of take their game to the next level or take the team's game to the next level. So I guess we'll start with mine just in case you guys aren't ready. mine would be to see more of kind of this a better pressing lineup and doing more of that. And I know they've tried it in a lot of games, but I think that this team has shown you that you could put Kenny Boy in at point, and you could put Beal at two, and then you could play Yeget and Prather and Young, and you can just have the longest, most athletic, fastest team that is going to be difficult to match by everybody not Kentucky. And I just want to see what you could do in that case, because I think when maybe there's questions about your ball movement and what you're running, and especially on the road, how well you're moving the ball and playing offense, to be able to generate turnovers and score in transition would only help them, I think.
Do you think that there's any chance that they're holding back that lineup to not give somebody else something to look at before they play some of their tougher matches, some of their tougher games against SEC foes? I know it sounds kind of silly, but do you think that's possible? I
mean, you would think that they would have thrown,
yeah, like they would
like
have used
out,
it.
Right?
Yeah, they would have at least tried it, you know.
I mean, maybe that hiding it doesn't strike me as a very Billy thing to do.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I was just wondering.
But what's
know?
Weird is that we saw against Tennessee that they went to lineups with Wilbekin and Prather was out there and Yeget was out there, and it's like, well, clearly you want the best defensive lineup, but it's not necessarily the unit that we would look at and say these are the guys that would be your, because then you also mix in like a Murphy and Irv, and it's like, well, now you kind of got, you know, pieces of both sides of it a little bit. I don't know. But there's a chance. I'm just hoping we see it at one point or another. You guys have something on this front?
Yeah. My resolution would be for them to not give up back-to-back games where they lose the rebounding battle. I'm not going to, you know, sit here and expect them to win week in and week out against, you know, teams that have better front lines than they do. And certainly from what we've heard the last week on Billy's opinion on the youth and experience, you got to think in a couple games that's going to happen. But really over the break, we saw a string of about three games where they were really dominated on the boards by bad teams. And it happened. There was a flare last night in the second half against Georgia when Georgia went on their run, where they started grabbing a couple offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds. And I don't know if that was just, you know, a little, okay, we're up by 25, we don't need to hustle as much. But that was a little disturbing to see that go away, where, you know, Georgia, which doesn't have a good front line at all, you know, is able to go in there and go on a run like they did.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, for me, it's got to be little Irv. He's got to accept his role as a lesser role. He's just got to. If he can do that and cut out the bad shots and also be the better distributor of the ball that he can be, then I think that's only going to help the team. And I feel like that he doesn't have a shot at, I mean, it's kind of mean to say, but he doesn't have a shot at playing at the next level.
But that's what I feel like.
Right.
I see him take some shots.
Right. So his chance at basketball glory is to put it aside, put his personal goals aside, and play for the team this year to try and win a championship. Man.
I mean, makes sense to me. All right, I guess with that, we're ready to move into our Ahmad Black Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport. And our Will Hill Awful Life Decisions of the Week. We firmly believe in ending on a bad note, even in the new year. So we're going to start with Mr. Booth, and we'll start with the Ahmads.
Yeah, my Ahmad for this week, or are we starting out with Will's?
We start out with the Ahmads.
Okay, we're going to start out with the Ahmads. All right. My Ahmad is going to go to Illinois guard. Is he a guard or guard forward?
He's a swingman.
Swingman, okay. Illinois swingman Brandon Paul went for 43 points last night, beating Ohio State, who I believe is number 5 in the nation.
Yeah, they were 5.
Currently, and I got back to the office after that UGA game, and that the Illinois Ohio State game I believe was still going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as I went on Twitter once I got back to the office, all the UF players were watching the game, and they kept on going on and on about this Paul kid. So finally I looked it up, and I thought, seriously, the first couple times I was like, nobody is going to score 43 points against Ohio State.
Right, that's so many.
In a college game, it's just absurd. It has to go to him. All the Ahmads, in my opinion, this week should go to Brandon Paul.
He gets all of the Ahmads.
All the Ahmads.
And I guess we're done here. Watts, what's yours?
Technically, this could either go either way as an Ahmad or a Will Hill, depending on your stance. I want to preface by saying I don't necessarily like this individual, but I like the act, which it was Ahmad worthy. Money, or Floyd Money Mayweather. Hmm. He tweeted, I believe it was 2 days ago, calling out Manny Pacquiao to say, "Let's fight May 5th, let's get this done. I got my jail sentence pushed back."
Oh, I thought that was hilarious.
Let's do this. So, and every bit of that is just epic and great. And I don't like Mayweather, but I like the fact that it's a possibility this could get done. I mean, who knows, all the, BS, blood testing, every other hoop he wants him to jump through. But let's just hope that this is the catalyst to getting that fight done, because everybody wants to see it.
Right, it's been a long time coming.
Might as well just do it.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Mine is going to go – I went a little big picture here because we haven't done this in a while. So I want to give it to the Indiana basketball team. I think they came out of nowhere, and they've beaten Ohio State at home. They beat Kentucky at home. They beat Michigan at home. And these are teams that I don't think many people gave them a real shot to beat before the year. But Cody Zeller's been amazing, and Victor Oladipo and Jordan Halls and Christian Watford. They have a very, very good team, and it was just impressive what they've done. So I thought I'd give them a little shout-out on the podcast since we did a lot of college hoops today. All right, it's time to move over to the Will Hills. We'll start again with Booth. What do you got?
My Will Hills are for preseason top 25 polls. And these aren't the ones that happen, a month or a couple weeks before the season starts. These are the ones that came in that were probably being typed up during the national
championship. I did try to find one yesterday.
Yeah, and it's to need somebody to, and even I think power rankings are kind of stupid.
Agreed.
You see those on every website, power ranking. You need somebody to tell you who the best team is. There's always already rankings to do that. Now you need power rankings to make it even more clear. So
it's just great that the term power rankings even exists is funny. On a side note, it's better than regular rankings. There's power.
And I'm a complete hypocrite, and I'm sure a lot of America feels same way. I read it. I just read one. That's where I got it from, and I was like, this is so stupid. Why am I reading this? These people have no idea who's going to be good next year.
Right.
I have no idea. Recruiting classes aren't even finished.
Right, I'm with you.
Players haven't even fully declared. It's just the worst. Coaches haven't been fired yet or hired yet. It's just absolutely horrible.
It's definitely a fault of kind of the sport consuming culture a little bit there that we let that happen. But all right, Watts, what do you got for us?
It's kind of a non-sports related, but it was so disturbing to me that I had to go ahead and mention it. There's a video posted recently on YouTube of Marines urinating on the dead corpses of Taliban fighters overseas. I don't want to go too deep into this because it's just depressing and disgusting, and but it needs to be talked about. People need to know about this because these are the people that are supposed to be, the upstanding honor, the most honorable people of, the United States. They're supposed to represent us overseas, do all this, great patriotic stuff. And then they're going to go ahead and post a video on YouTube of them urinating on the Taliban, So to me, it was just disgusting. And I just, was really disturbed by it, so we had to get it out there.
Right, yeah. It's rough to kind of move on from there.
Yeah, I'm sorry to do that to you.
No disrespect when I go in a completely different direction and have a little fun with this.
Go for it.
Something serious, but mine was, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, and then last night I was watching SportsCenter at 2 in the morning, as most people usually do, right? And then they go over one of these sports science segments with Tim Tebow, and it was the stupidest thing that I've ever seen in my whole life. Let's talk about this for a little bit. Apparently, they broke down just the play that was the last play of the game, the 80-yard touchdown to Demaryius Thomas. And they were like, Tim Tebow had to lead Demaryius Thomas by 10 yards on this throw. And he released the ball in 0.5 seconds. If he used his normal release that takes 0.6 seconds, he would have underthrown him by 2 yards, and he would have been tackled right away. And it's like, well, he might have just thrown the ball. Like, what does that even mean? Where are you getting this? And so I was looking into it. Then, actually, the worst one was when they said that Demaryius Thomas was the man, and, like, the reason he stiff-armed the other guy was because his arms are 7/8 of an inch longer than the other guy's arms. They, like, busted out the numbers for these guys' arm length and said it was because it was 7/8 of an inch longer that he stiff-armed him.
Soon, listeners, you might be able to see my reaction to this, but since you can't right now, it's a double facepalm.
Also, they said that once Demaryius Thomas caught the ball, he had a 2-yard gap between him and Ike Taylor, but because Ike Taylor ran a 4.23, he was able to close the gap in 1.5 seconds. And I was like, first of all, they're both running full speed already. He doesn't run a 1.23 this many years into his career wearing pads. It's like, it's so ridiculous. And so I looked into it, and I was like, maybe this John Brinkus guy is actually kind of smart, and they just kind of shoehorned him into this stupid thing. But he's like a music video producer who just happens to have this, like, motion capture software stuff. So they just, like, have him ramble on the air about, like, nothing. He has no idea what he's talking
about.
So
he's not, like, an academic or anything.
No,
like
he did, like, a UFC show where he kind of used this stuff, and then I guess ESPN saw it and was like, this could be cool. And so he just, like, has the software that does it, and he's, like, making short films and stuff.
I always thought he was, like, some kinesiology, buff or something. Yeah. Like,
I figured he was a smart scientist and being made to look dumb, but he's just a guy. Doing stupid things.
Jeez. Anyway, jeez.
We've gone way over time. The online people are trying to get their room back, so we have to wrap up the show. But send any feedback to podcastalligator.org. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Alligator Sports. I'm at Greg Luca Booth. Where are you at?
At JJ Booth.
Watts.
At Watt Mats.
And then you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. Like we said, send us the emails. We know we've been gone for a while. We're sorry about that. But if you have anything you want us to cover that happened over the break or anything you want us to talk about going forward, we'll be sure to respond to that. We also have a football show coming to you tomorrow and hopefully a recruiting show coming to you soon after that. So we'll see you then. Until then, thank you for listening. Lean grind.